Off the Ball, GAA.
I don't want to make excuses. We had three games in 14 days. That certainly takes it out of teams. Like, I heard Jack O'Connor talking about it yesterday, and that's Kerry and the depth of their squad.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Inside the Odds with NoviBet. Miss out on the final bet builder leg? Get up to a €10 free bet back every day on football's biggest tournament this summer if your bet builder loses. NoviBet. More power to you.
18 plus. Play responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome along to this week's Inside the Odds with NoviBet. Miss out on the final bet builder leg? Get up to a €10 free bet back every day on football's biggest tournament this summer if your bet builder loses. NoviBet, more power to you. 18 plus. Play responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie. Today we're joined by Enda Cole. Enda, how are we?
How are we?
All good. And Matthew, how are we?
How's it going, Dave?
All good. I suppose the big news of yesterday evening was when I was leaving the office, a nice rousing cheer went up because DR Congo had just gone ahead. And I suppose England did come back and win the game. But what did we think of England's performance yesterday? Are England doomed?
I think so, against Mexico. Given Mexico's record in the Azteca, I know we'll talk about it in a second in terms of the altitude and everything that's going on. But I thought, like, the DRC, those boys can play a bit of ball, can't they?
Yeah.
Like, everyone thought this was going to be a backs the wall, including Tuchel, who said that, you know, they're not going to be glamorous football because they're going to play really defensively. They didn't. They started playing the ball out from the back and playing it through the lines. Midfield in England looked lost at times. It, you know, I'd say looked better when Declan Rice went to right back, bizarrely. But, yeah, England are poor. That right-hand side of Noni Madueke and Jed Spence, if that's them for the rest of the tournament, I think the rest of the tournament for them will be one game.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. I suppose I watched DRC against Portugal, and they were really well in that game and had opportunities to go, you know, to win that game. And they played really good football, and they played really good football at times as well. Yes, obviously England had a lot of chances, and the keeper Mpassi for DRC made a couple of brilliant saves. But England as a whole, Harry Kane rescues them. Is this looking ominous for Thomas Tuchel? Do you reckon he's going to be England manager by next month?
Oh, we're jumping a long way here. I do think if they don't get very deep into this tournament, they probably will just call it a day and follow the trend of managers leaving their post after exiting this tournament. But I wouldn't be signaling the death knell or whatever for England at the moment. They did. You're never going to sail through a tournament, especially the World Cup. They weren't good yesterday. They haven't really been good at all. They had a decent patch, I suppose, against Croatia, who decided to take them on. They didn't know what to do against Ghana. They didn't know what to do for the majority of the game against Panama, although that was not entirely a dead rubber, but it wasn't make or break. And they looked really up against it there yesterday. I think they completely, tactically and everything, got it totally wrong. Assumed the DRC would do what Ghana did and not really do anything and just defend with their lives and, you know, try and sneak one on the break. And I suppose maybe that's doing Ghana a little bit of a discredit, because they did have chances and they should have had a penalty, and we had some penalty incidents in the game yesterday as well. But the DRC showed no fear at all. They do have some decent footballers, a lot of whom we kind of are familiar with over the course of the last half a decade in the Premier League. Players who haven't really set the world alight. Vissa, maybe outside of that, has done quite well. His miss at the end of the first half, at the time, it's easy to say that's going to come back and bite them, but it did come back and bite them. And you kind of got that feeling at the moment, in that moment, where you're thinking there's going to come a period in this game where England do take over to a degree, and the DRC decide, okay, we have what we have, let's try and hold it. And to their credit, they did a decent job of that. There was some good last ditch defending. Aaron Wan-Bissaka had a good one cleared the good one off the line for Marcus Rashford, and the goalkeeper, Mpanzi was playing out of his skin too. Probably could have done a little bit better, maybe for one or two of the goals, but when you're under that much pressure, maybe not the second goal, that's a little bit harsh, but the first goal, maybe he'd be thinking he could have done
on Harry Kane
a slight bit better.
For the two goals, we saw the best of Harry Kane there with the movement in the box and then obviously the outrageous finish for the second goal. But I also thought throughout the game we saw the worst of Harry Kane, and something we haven't seen in a while, because he's sort of out of sight, out of mind with Bayern, in that element of
diving and cheating
and rolling around and trying to get DR Congo players booked.
Yeah.
And I thought it very, very, like, in your face in this game, how much diving and play acting has infiltrated the English camp with the Premier League, and how much more obvious it is that they do it versus like the international sides, the South American sides, who would have been previously obviously famous for this, or famously accused of this by European centrism football, and especially English football, which were, you know, they were always held themselves as the gentlemen who didn't do this.
Yeah.
Whereas now I think it's very much England who do this.
Yeah.
And it's so obvious that the other teams don't do it as much.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I can't get over, especially Bellingham and Kane in particular, constantly looking for bookings, you know, any little bit of contact around knees or ankles, they're going down. They're trying to make the most out of every single challenge. I think the best example of it was is when England tried to play a little bit of football out of the back and the ball went back to Pickford, and he sent the ball about 50 yards over Harry Kane's head. And Harry Kane obviously knew he couldn't get on to the end of it, and he just runs into Axel Tuanzebe and goes down, and like, hey, and you could actually hear his shout on the
screamed,
on the touchline microphones, and it's just really, it's mad how England were always, and growing up, like, I'm kind of that generation watching the Premier League, whatever, and you growing up, like, England are these bastions of gentlemanly conduct, and you know, you'd have like people like, you know, Graeme Souness is Scottish, but he would have be on Sky Sports saying, oh, you know, we don't have this in our game. England are very much the example to everyone about, you know, kind of diving, cheating, trying to, you know, all the fine margins, all the little percentages that they are trying to get to make sure that they win the game. And even the Harry Kane dive, which was an incredibly good dive, like so good that he nearly duped us all. But
what a call.
It was a dive. And the referee, the Jordanian referee has to get serious credit, because it was unbelievable call. And fair play to the VAR for not, you know, overruling him on that either, because it easily, and I've seen numerous members of the English press pack, you know, Henry Winter and a few others saying, oh, we have to have a look at that. Ollie Holt, I think, was the same. We have to, that's a penalty, you know, that's a penalty.
Alan Shearer was losing it on call.
Yeah, I heard that. I was watching an RTE, so I didn't hear that, but I heard Alan Shearer kind of going, losing his mind a little bit. But if that was the other way around, like, the commentary in that is totally different.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of English fans, I know you can only take social media with as far as you want to take it, but after the game, who had been going on about that penalty throughout, saying, oh, we've been robbed, blah, 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 and then the game ends and they get the victory, and they're like, yeah, now that we've actually won, we can kind of look back at that and go, that's never a penalty, you know? So it is just that fan culture with it. I see what you mean about the diving and all that sort of thing. I get that, and it definitely is more evident in England now than it ever has been, in the England national team anyway. But I would just be slightly hesitant to suggest that they do it far more than everyone else.
Oh, I don't know. I think they do.
I think there's a bit of blindness with us in that we, maybe it's not blindness, it's probably intentional, that because we're not the biggest fans of England, let's say, we can let it kind of override and be a little bit more annoyed when it happens and take more notice of it because we don't like them than maybe the way we would with other countries. But I do agree, it is very jarring, and it is off-putting, and it is happening. But at the same time, it's probably something years ago they thought, why aren't our players doing this?
Well, that is,
and
that,
now
that,
they are.
Yeah, that's a major thing, is that they used to say, we need to start doing this because other teams are doing it, and it's giving them an advantage. I do think it's very similar, though, when you watch the WSL or any women's football. How much, like, if you watch a women's football match or in the WSL, and then go and watch a Premier League match, it will be so jarring to you how much Premier League footballers dive and roll around and play act and get up straight away afterwards. It's incredible how much they do it.
Yeah.
Like the whole, it's the feigning of the injury and then getting up when the referee doesn't do anything and then just running on as if nothing happened. Like it's a major part of football at the minute.
Do you think they'll beat Mexico?
I don't know. Let me think of that over the course of the next 20 minutes or so, and I'll come up with an answer for that. But I suppose for the next couple of days, there's a huge game, especially in an Irish context, tomorrow evening, with Argentina taking on Cape Verde. And the bet builder for Novi Bet this week is Argentina to win, Messi to have over 2.5 shots on target, over 4.5 cards, and that comes in at 11-2, and it's there on screen there if you know. What do we think? Argentina to win? I think that's a given. That's Argentina to win in 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think they'll win in 90 minutes. Yeah. I haven't put this bet together, but, you know, it's a kind of a combined thing that we do. I wouldn't be against it. I think you'd be mad to back against them based off what we've seen so far in this tournament.
The shots on target for Messi.
Yeah,
Three shots on target.
I'm not sure if we have the answer to this, but does a blocked shot, if it's going on target, count?
No.
The keeper has
goalkeeper
to save it.
Or he scores, obviously.
I would be a bit worried about that one, simply down to the fact that Kiffer have been so good at getting bodies in the way of shots.
That's been their method of defending,
especially in the Spain match. They did phenomenally at that. So if I think Messi will have more than three shots. Whether or not they'll reach the goal is the question. Penalties, does that count? Shot on target?
Yeah. Well, obviously not in the shootout because it's all within
90 minutes.
No, of course,
minutes,
yeah. So,
I think he'll score. He potentially might have a penalty as well, so that'll be two, and then he only needs one more.
And
so
the thing is, I could see, as you say, about the blocks and all that sort of thing and the last-ditch defending, which I imagine they will try and do from the edge of their own box, really. I could see Messi having a couple of shots from him in and around the edge of the box, maybe win a free kick or two that might not go in, but go on target. That's probably the one you'd be looking at, as well as the cards, I suppose. The cards, five cards in a game is... I don't know. I don't have the stats on it, but I don't think it's unlikely. I think with the nature of the way this game is going to unfold, if it does get any way, there's two ways, I suppose, those cards come about, in that if the game is tight or if Cape Verde managed to score early or something like that, you could see these Argentina players getting a little bit rowdy, getting a little bit ratty, as they do tend to do.
Yeah.
And that's where the cards might come. You could also see that the vice versa too, where Cape Verde might venture up the field and a counter-attack is on and I'll just grab him there in yellow. You know, you can theorise this way whatever way you want, but I think when Argentina are playing, cards are likely.
Yeah, like I suppose you compare it to probably the Spain-Cape Verde game, and Cape Verde really counter-attacked really, really quickly and really, really well for the large part, and they were just missing that final ball to create that good chance to get a goal and possibly win the game. I could see... some of the Argentinian midfields, like Alexis McAllister, or Leandro Paredes, if he plays.
Paredes.
Enzo
Almada.
Enzo, Thiago Almada. Like, they're not blessed at running, not blessed at running power, and also not blessed at running power, running backwards towards their own goal.
No.
So I can see just an easy, we'll just take him down there. That happened to Pedri in that game. It's been Cape Verde as well. So, I think that's not a bad price at 11-2. Messi versus Pico Lopez. Did we ever thought we'd say that sentence?
No. I don't think Pico Lopez ever thought you'd say that sentence. He did also say, I thought it was funny, where he thinks it's a mad concept that in the Argentina dressing room, they're looking over footage with Pico Lopez and mentioning him by name and saying, this is how you can get at him. So it's funny enough, the way that Argentina play and the way that Messi plays, he actually might not have too much contact with him on the pitch at all, except for maybe in the final third, if he gets into the box and he has to defend a shot, because Messi obviously drops deep so much now to get the ball and kind of work in the pockets in the midfield. But, I mean, if he plays as he has played in this World Cup, especially like his performance against Spain, Messi's in for a hard enough day against Pico Lopez.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a rock at the back there. Obviously not the strongest on the ball or with his distribution, as is the case with most of the Cape Verde team, but when it comes to actually defending backs to the wall stuff, Nico Lopez is one of the best in the tournament so far.
Yeah, and the boy beside him, Dini Borges, has been one of the highest rated defenders in the World Cup. So yeah, he's got a very high rating according to FootMob, amongst others. It could be Messi versus Vizinha, and I think after the very first game, Spain and Cape Verde in that draw, obviously Vizinha made a couple of great saves, and I actually said it to Philly and that, like, Vizinha is the type of goalkeeper, he looks kind of cool, he plays the ball with his feet a little bit, he's a bit mad, he's throwing himself all around the goal.
He's erratic.
He is inspiring young people to be goalkeepers. Messi versus Vizinha. That's probably something that Vizinha probably never said, playing in the Portuguese second division, only turning professional at 25, but like, what a story that is.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable story. But that is what the World Cup, I suppose, is all about. I know that's a cliche term of all these stories, and it's the unexpected ones. And when you looked at the round of 16, round of 32 even, sorry, as it is with the 48 teams in the World Cup, but you could pick out teams, Japan might give Brazil a game, and you look at some of the others where you're thinking, okay, Sweden, if they turn up, you know, if something might click, they could give France a game. Obviously that didn't happen, but the best part about it are the games you don't expect it at all, like Paraguay going and beating Germany, where you're kind of going, okay, Germany should come through that. Like Paraguay, we know it's a knockout game, anything can happen, but you weren't giving them much of a sniff. And it's a similar thing for Cape Verde here. And if they are going to go on and get anything from this game, they're going to need Vizinha to play out of his skin once again, which is what he's been doing for the entire tournament. But there are these type of cult heroes that do come out of it. And I suppose he's probably, if they do manage to go and get anything out of this game and even give a good account of themselves, that cult hero status for him will probably elevate even beyond that, maybe as a, he's already an icon of the country, really. All these guys are, considering what they've achieved. But his story is certainly something to behold. And the goalkeepers have stolen the show, really, at the World Cup so far as well, especially from these smaller nations. I mean, yeah, we've got the Gale and goal for Paraguay the other day, and Mpazi last night for the DRC. So, yeah, best of luck to him.
Yeah, no, it should be a fascinating game. It's 11 o'clock on Friday night. Speaking of icons of their national teams, Cristiano Ronaldo takes on Luka Modric, Portugal versus Croatia tonight. That's a midnight kickoff. Bit of a late one for you guys on breakfast, but
well, I'm off tomorrow, so I'll see you there.
Yeah, well, to see if you can stay up for that one. But yeah, Portugal Croatia. It's an interesting because it's an all European type. Croatia playing more European opposition again. Is this one where we kind of do we think that Croatia can upset the apple cart here and beat Portugal? Is this something that, you know, Luka Modric 40, Cristiano Ronaldo 41?
Yeah, I didn't think that Croatia were too bad against England.
No.
Like England were obviously the better side in the game, but considering, like, Portugal, outside of the Ronaldo stuff, like, they, I don't know, obviously is a big factor in context and how they're playing, but, like, their other players are also not playing very well either.
Mm.
They've kind of stuttered their way through this. That's not to say that they won't just take off now in the same way as some teams do in knockout football. So, look, I think on paper, Portugal obviously have the better side. But considering the amount of work that Croatia do through the midfield, if they're able to keep the ball off Portugal don't have much creativity outside of their midfield. So,
yeah. You were watching Portugal Colombia on Saturday, quite interestingly.
I was, yeah. I stayed up for that one. And I was more taken aback by how good Colombia were than how poor Portugal were. If I didn't know any better, I would have assumed that Portugal were in a position of strength in the group where they only needed a draw. And I think that's because Colombia just put them under that much pressure, both with like their football and ability. Guys like James absolutely rolling back the years, and the threats they do have with Luis Diaz and John Cordoba starting up front, and he's not even their number one, number nine. I suppose it's Luis Suarez who came off the bench. They ran Portugal into the ground. They physically bullied them, and that's something I think that Portugal are going to struggle with throughout the tournament if they do get deep into it. But look at that group. It's aged pretty well in the sense that, I say it's aged pretty well over last night when we saw what the DRC did against England. Portugal obviously only got a draw against them. They did draw with Colombia. We're fortunate, obviously, the Davinson Sanchez offside call is probably one of the tightest calls you'll ever come across. The Uzbekistan, you can sort of forget about them. They were a bit of a write-off in that group. I think Portugal will struggle against teams that are going to physically impose themselves on them and press them and not give them any time on the ball and not show them any respect.
Yeah,
I think the European teams are a bit different. I think the likes of, so I'm looking at Spain or Portugal's sort of route here. If they do come through against Croatia, they'll play the winner of Spain and Austria. I don't think that'll be straightforward for Spain. Another game tonight. I think they'll come through it. You're looking at them playing Spain, just finish this through, and then you've got a quarter final against either the USA or Belgium. I think Portugal look at that favourably. I think they would fancy their chances against Spain. Personally, I think I would fancy Portugal more against Spain than I would against Colombia, based off what I saw there the other night. And they're going to be avoiding the likes of Morocco until that semi-final stage, and you're kind of in the lap of the gods there, really, with what way it turns out. I think they'll come through tonight. I think there'll be a couple of goals, but it's not going to be easy for them. Croatia aren't a bad side, and as you said, they were reasonably impressive against England. They took the game to them, but I think if they take the game to Portugal, I don't think they'll have too much joy.
Yeah, I'm not so sure they can actually physically take it.
Yeah,
to Portugal.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If you look through some of the players that they have at their disposal, they've been starting from midfield forward. Modric is 40, Kovacic is 32, Perisic is 37, Vlasic is 28, and Budimir is 34.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's not exactly the basis of a young and energetic team.
No,
like not much pace in that side either.
Luka Modric, 200 caps. The guy that played up front against England, oh, his name escapes me now, but he plays his football at FC Dallas in the MLS. Yeah. He was pretty good against England, to be sure.
Yeah, I remember the fact, yeah, he held the ball up.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah, Croatia definitely always have a chance. Like,
They're a tournament team as well.
They are, exactly. Tournament team, 2018, they kind of drew a load of games, won games on penalties, beat Russia, obviously got the semi-final and beat England in extra time. And yeah, they kind of stumbled. I wouldn't bet against them doing that again. Now, Modric obviously isn't the same player as what he was, you know, 8 years ago, but he's definitely not the player he was maybe even 2 or 3 years ago. He struggled really in that game against England in particular. So when he's playing against a midfield of João Neves and Vitinha, I'd worry about that. Spain and Austria, just very briefly, is an interesting game. Spain obviously going to keep the ball. They like to, you know, pass the ball to death. And Austria like to press and counterattack like no tomorrow, especially under Ralf Rangnick. Is this a potential kind of banana skin for Spain?
I think it might be. I think it might be, but that's not to say, again, it's the same when you talk about England and Mexico, you go, okay, this is a banana skin for England, but England are a better team than Mexico, they should go and win that game, and if they don't, it's a shock. Mm-hmm. This is the same. Spain are a better team than Austria, but Austria have threats. I watched the Austria and Argentina game, and I thought they were good without being great. Mm-hmm. I didn't manage to stay up for the mad game they had against Algeria, which I think took on a life of its own, so I wouldn't be reading a whole lot into that. I think Austria are well capable of holding off that pass to death way that Spain do approach it. I think there's a little bit more of a bang of the Luis Enrique early stages Spain here, where they passed a lot and didn't quite have it in the final third, which is why they went out in extra time and penalties in some of those tournaments. Again, you would have to fancy Spain to come through. They haven't been impressive. They haven't been impressed at all, really, in this tournament so far. They blew Saudi Arabia out of water, fair enough.
Who are terrible.
Yeah, who are terrible. And
struggled against Uruguay, who are terrible as well. And the keeper threw one in, Muslera threw one in that game as well. Yeah. And obviously, Juri Cape Verde. Spain, a lot of people's favourites before the tournament, haven't really set the world alight.
They may grow into the tournament, is the only thing, because they do have players who aren't totally fit. Are they going to be fit? I don't know. Danny Olmo came on last, I thought he was quite good.
Yeah.
So it's one of them. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see them crash out, but it'll be a late finish, I think.
Yeah, Mal hasn't been fully fit yet at the tournament.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what's missing as well, like the likes of Yamal and even Nico Williams as well. Like
who's had injuries all season as well.
Exactly. So like if the two of them are fully fit, you're thinking it's a different Spain side because they do have that breakaway pace.
Yeah.
Whereas now this is more like a, I don't know, 2014, 2016 Spain team that it just has no real, like Oyarzabal isn't really a out and out striker. They haven't really had a proper striker in the guts of a decade. So they need the wingers and the wide players to be those. And at the minute they're not. On Austria, like Austria are very similar vibes to like Switzerland or even like Croatia are probably a higher level of this, but they are just a tournament team that always seem to go to at least to the last 16, if not a little bit further. So like Austria will be more than happy to sit back and wait for Spain to pass and pass and pass, and they'll just like
the only thing to kind of contradict that ever so slightly is it's a Ralf Rangnick team who is notorious for not doing that and just going balls to the wall, really.
You would have to question the coaching setup there as well with what happened in that Algeria game, because it seemed like Austria didn't know what was the outcome if the results said the same in that game. So look, they obviously know that if they don't win this game, they're out.
It
would be a cracking tie if we did get Portugal and Spain in the last 16.
We got them in the
2018
World Cup. Ronaldo scored that free kick. Cracker of a game. It was 3-3.
Some unbelievable goal. I remember Nacho Fernandez.
I remember
my favourite goals of that tournament.
Yeah. Watched it in a pub in Vancouver.
Great game.
Sensational match.
So hopefully we get that one. Yeah. I would say, sorry, I know you probably want to move on. This is stating the obvious here, but you can't underestimate the importance of an early goal for the big teams in these games, because it hasn't been happening. Even France were knocking on the door and knocking on the door and knocking on the door. Eventually got that one just before half time, and that you could tell that really, not that it settled them, but it did, you know, and it gives you that bit of freedom to go and take the game on and in the second half and kill it, or trust your defence and see the game out, because we haven't seen the big teams do that yet. England didn't do it, Germany didn't do it, Portugal and Spain will be hoping they can do it tonight.
Yeah, we'll go quick fire through these next few. Switzerland and Algeria is in the very early hours, 4 o'clock in the morning. Switzerland, Algeria.
Switzerland.
We'll go tomorrow night, Australia and Egypt. What I think is actually a fascinating game. I know it looks like a bit of a, oh, I don't know about that, but Australia are a really interesting team with really interesting players, and in a period of their football history where it's just, yeah, really exciting, I think, to be an Aussie football fan. They're playing Egypt, who are obviously playing their first knockout game. Australia-Egypt?
I would like to see Egypt win. No, sorry, why did I say that? I'd like to see Australia win. I don't know why I said that. I think I was caught between saying I would like to see Australia win, but I think Egypt are going to win.
Okay.
I'm going with an Egypt one. I want to see Mo Salah deeper in this tournament.
Okay. I want to see Iran Kunda nail a free kick.
Nestor Iran Kunda is a good wee player. We've done Argentina-Cape Verde. Colombia-Ghana is the early hours of Saturday morning, 2:30. Ghana were very defensively good. Colombia looked like they were a pretty good side, in a word.
Colombia.
Matthew's very hot in Colombia. I'm going to say Colombia, as long as they don't start their version of Luis Suarez.
I think they putrid. Will. Hat-trick incoming. He's had a very good season, but he's missed some sitters.
Yeah, I think that's his thing. He's a bit like Darwin Nunez. Yeah, like, scores two in every 10, but like he gets 10 chances. Yeah. So, so that leads us on to Saturday, where we have the first of the last 16 games. Canada and Morocco. Do we just think Morocco are going to roll over Canada and Canada's dream run, which they've been quite lucky to be on this run? Is that the end of the road for Jesse Marsh's boys?
Yeah, I think so. Canada have not been very good throughout this tournament. I know they've scored a good few goals, but then like they came late and they came with great effort.
Yeah,
I don't think they'll be able to get past Morocco here.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But it is good to see that they've gotten this far. I suppose you do want the host nations to get as far as possible, really.
But then when they're not so good, they're
absolutely.
Like,
yeah, it's like the underdog thing. It's like, you don't ruin it now. Don't overstay your welcome. But the only thing with Canada, and just slightly takes away from the host going really far, is that they haven't really been playing in Canada. They played a couple of games in the group stage, but their knockout games have been in the US, so you haven't really had that effect of them getting to play at home and the crowds being there. But America kind of has this different sort of way about it, in that no matter how far the host nations go, the stadium's still going to be full because of the kind of diasporic nature to how America works. Yeah. But I think that'd be the end of the run for them.
Yeah. Canada play Morocco in Houston on Saturday evening at 6:00. Paraguay, France, is this the end of the run? We were speaking about underdogs. Paraguay, is this the end of the road for them?
This could be a bloodbath.
Yeah. I think they're going to take lumps out of France, aren't they? Gustavo Gomez.
Sorry, when you said bloodbath, I thought you meant France are going to win like 6-0.
Oh, a bit of both.
That's what you mean.
No, right, a bit of both, yeah. I do think Paraguay are going to show their South American teeth here.
Yeah.
And Cisco might have a few things to say to Kylian Mbappe or one of those boys. But I think France genuinely have the ability to stick 6-7.
Yeah, France will. France will.
I actually accidentally said that. Just
crazy.
It's just one of those things.
And see, the worst part is people are listening on audio and they don't even know what you've done. But I'll let them guess. I think France will have too much for Paraguay, but Paraguay will leave a few in late. I think early on.
are France the most exciting team of this tournament? Are they like the team that kind of inspires joy and love for football, like in everything good about the game, the way you watch this team?
Somehow, because that's not what they've been known for under Deschamps, but it just seems to be that the way that they've been set up over these years, and the fact that they all know, and it's a lot of the same players too, a little bit different maybe in the defence now with some of them, but it just seems so ingrained in them that they know what their jobs are. As far as the structure goes, but it's a kind of corporate sporting term, but there's freedom within the structure.
Yeah,
go and do what you want.
Are we going to remember France 26 as like a Brazil 82 or a Brazil 1970?
That's what I was about to say. It's like the Andrew Bernard quote: "You wish you knew you were in the good times when you're in the good times." That's I think it's worth calling. And people are afraid to call it too early because they might not go on and win it. But I do think they will go on and win it. But I mean, France or the Brazil team came up short in 98, the 2002 team, then again, like that forward line is remembered as one of the greatest forward lines ever to work up the Brazil 70s team as well. This France team will go on to be that. They've been in two World Cup finals in a row. They're probably going to be in a third. They're probably going to win it, and this is probably the best version of Deschamps' France team. So overall, bar Adrian Rabiot for some reason, who's stuck in the midfield this whole way through.
As I say, he knows what he's doing.
You need someone like that. You need piano pushers, you need the piano players, but you need the piano pushers.
And even if they don't go on and win it, I think you can still step back. You'd be like if they go and lose to Paraguay, that's obviously not good at all.
Yeah.
You still appreciate what we've seen in this tournament. It's ridiculous stuff that they're putting on show. And look, they're probably not going to sail through every game. Likely would play Morocco based off of our predictions in the next round. That won't be easy. You'd still expect them to have too much, but you'd expect them to have too much for everybody, and the reality is they might not, but you can still appreciate what you're watching.
Yeah, France looking to become the third team to go to three World Cup finals in a row. West Germany, 82, 86 and 90, obviously the one in 90. Brazil in 94, 98 and 2002. Brazil obviously won in 94 and in 2002. And France obviously 18, 22, won in 18, lost in 22, and hoping to go back for 26. So
it's a great stat.
Yeah, it is. And Deschamps obviously will be, I thought he'd be the person with the most amount of World Cup final appearances if they do get there. But it's actually Mario Zagallo, the Brazilian Brazilian legend, I suppose, played in three World Cup finals, coached, was the head coach in one and assistant coach in another. So he's been in five, I think. So Deschamps looking obviously go to his fourth. He obviously won one as a player. On Sunday we have Brazil and Norway, which I think might be the game of the World Cup so far.
As far as looking ahead to, or what you anticipate it being?
I think both. I think it's just a brilliant game.
Gabriel
versus
Haaland. Yeah, forgot about that. Wow, that'd be brilliant.
Martin Odegaard versus Bruno Guimaraes.
A smiling Erling Haaland.
Yeah,
I've never seen a man happier to be just at the World Cup. Yeah, thing.
Yeah. It goes to show you, like, he can be paid all the money in the world at Manchester City and win all the trophies, but like playing for his country at the World Cup is still the pinnacle.
A man loves Norway.
He loves Norway. And yeah, this game, I like Brazil, you know, there's a lot of Brazilian people obviously here in Dublin. I've seen so many Brazilian shirts, obviously, was Monday when the game was on. And they are pretty confident, from a few of them I've been talking to, they're pretty confident that they're going to beat Norway. You know, they've got Haaland, they've got Odegaard, but who else do they really have? I don't know. I think, you know, they rested all those players against France. Is this kind of some good long-term planning from Ståle Solbakken? And I think it might be. And I just think they've got a shot against Brazil. They famously beat Brazil in 98 in the group stage 2-1 in France.
Never lost them.
No. So there you go.
Four times.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I have a good feeling that this game would be a really interesting game. The Brazil-Japan game is an excellent game as well on Monday night. Would you be feeling confident if you had your money all in Brazil?
No.
No?
No, I'd be feeling a little scared right now.
Yeah.
Especially with what happened against Japan. And then I know that Norway weren't all that impressive. Against Ivory Coast. But Ivory Coast kind of sat back and were very deep, and that doesn't allow any space for the boy, Brad Haaland, to do his thing. But Brazil won't do that. And that leaves space for Haaland. And if there's one player that can physically match Gabriel, as we've seen, it's Haaland.
Mm-hmm.
So if he can get in behind, and also Odegaard against that Brazilian midfield,
yeah,
getting into those pockets might cause him a few issues as well. I do think, look, obviously Brazil have a lot of attacking talent as well, and if you're looking at a weakness in the Norway team, it's probably in that back four. So it's such an interesting game
to
be set up for this knockout football as well.
Yeah, I would say Frederik Aursnes is one of the top players that you kind of, you know, he's a good player, but then you watch him for Norway, like, oh, he's brilliant.
It's like Benfica, isn't he?
You see him the other time for Benfica, it's like, oh, he's a good player. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
I think the likes of him, Odegaard, Antonio Nusa is a brilliant player.
Obviously Nusa scored
class goal on Monday against Ivory Coast. Yeah, I think this is such an opportunity for Norway.
It is. It's a huge opportunity for Norway. And the question that you put earlier about if you had all your money on Brazil, would you be confident? No, you wouldn't. But that doesn't mean that they don't have a chance to go and win this game. I think both teams are vulnerable in different ways, but also in similar ways, in that their midfield isn't the most mobile on either side. There's not a lot of legs in either, I don't think personally. I know some of the, maybe there's probably more legs in Norwegian midfield than there is in the Brazilian midfield, but I think there'll be goals. That's famous last words, probably finished 0-0 after 120 minutes and go to penalties and finished 2-0 on penalties.
Too many good players.
Yeah, I think there is too many good players, too much attacking talent, too much hunger, but an unbelievable opportunity for Norway. And I think it's only could be regarded as good forward planning from Solbakken if Norway go and win.
Yeah.
If they don't, then it's like, what are you doing? You could have avoided this.
I know what you mean. Were they ever going to beat France?
You give yourself the best chance. I don't know, but they might have done. They'll never know. Do you know?
Yeah.
And it'll be a great game. It'll be a great game.
Yeah. Just on Brazil, we've seen in Argentina in the 22 World Cup, obviously they got beat by Saudi Arabia in the first game. And then they kind of found their legs and they found their best team in that tournament. They kind of dropped Lautaro, brought in Julian Alvarez. They brought in Enzo Fernandez as well, obviously, who obviously went to Chelsea then after that. Are Brazil going to find their way, find their feet into this tournament? And have they come across a team now with Ryan? Maybe Endrick starts the next game. Okay, he didn't have a huge impact, but like he was an extra body up there.
They were better when he was on the pitch,
yeah,
for sure.
Is Ancelotti finding his feet with this Brazilian team?
Yeah, they're definitely better. I would actually say that Ryan is kind of the key player for them. I know he played some of the pre-tournament matches and was very good. So, look, Vinny Jr. is obviously the key man. I'm not saying Ryan has made himself the man for Brazil, but he definitely unlocks something in that Brazil setup that they potentially don't have with Rafinha on the pitch. I do think Cunha as well will have something to say if Brazil go deep into this tournament. He's such a good player going forward, but defensively he also provides a lot of cover because he works hard, and that allows to give yourself a little bit of breathing room with what Casemiro has been doing. So, I'm not sure about Endrick yet. I think he's still very indisciplined, and that's probably why Ancelotti doesn't put him in the team more often. Then obviously that it's been the memes of the tournament have been. But Ancelotti not playing Endrick, he knows a thing or two about ball, does Ancelotti,
and he does.
He loves the lighter touch. So maybe he's just saying, taking the pressure off them a little bit. Might even see Neymar.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think you trust him.
Neymar is just there for vibes and for, I actually was talking to a guy from Brazil there on Monday. Very interesting. He's a huge football fan, but very interestingly, he said, having Neymar in the squad is quite a good thing because, okay, he's not playing, but he's taking the spotlight away from all the rest of the players. So that in tandem, that kind of takes all the pressure away from all the rest of the players, because all the Brazilian media seem to be saying is like, will Neymar start this game? Will he come on in this game? And it's just Neymar, Neymar, Neymar. He should be playing. He should not be playing. One of those things. And then that might allow the players like Martinelli or Cunha or Igor Thiago or some of that become the hero of this Brazilian World Cup team.
And it doesn't seem as though Neymar is being too disruptive up until this point. He seems to be happy enough, and you never really know how disruptive players are or aren't. We kind of get one side of the coin on these things all the time, but he seems to be fairly content with the role that he's playing. I can see a world where that second half performance that they were forced to put in against Japan works out really well for them, in that they were pushed to the pin of their collar and they came through it, and they maybe saw something in each other that maybe they didn't know was there and went to a place that they haven't had to go to before and come out on the right side of it. And that could pay dividends to them going forward. In the same breath, Norway had to do something slightly similar, I suppose, against Ivory Coast. But I think that might work out for them, because there is always the danger teams aren't road tested when it gets to the big games.
Yeah.
And I think Brazil are road tested now.
Yeah, which could be a danger for Argentina. Just finally on Neymar, I think as well, a bit like Messi, that I think the rest of Brazilian players really do love him and they would love to win the World Cup, obviously for themselves and for Brazil, but I think also for Neymar too. I know he doesn't have the same, we don't have the same opinion of him generally here in Europe, because we see a kind of a flash kind of, okay, he's maybe takes the piss out of players, opposition players sometimes as well, and that's not maybe within the, you know, maybe that's the things that we don't love here in Europe, but like I love it, but that's one of those things.
I think as well the fact he's probably seized up a little bit quicker than perhaps we would have liked to have seen him do, and he only came to Europe when he was in his, would you even call it early 20s, I suppose, early to mid 20s, so it doesn't have that longevity of career that we've been exposed to. That the likes of, and look, he's not nowhere near as good as Messi and Ronaldo, or achieved as much as Messi and Ronaldo have achieved, but don't make that face.
That's Neymar Santos jersey.
That's the jersey he literally wears, that Novi Bet one there. Just to round it all off, Mexico and England, 1 o'clock in the morning, Sunday night into Monday morning. Is this the game where we see Declan Rice running to the sideline gasping for oxygen as Mexico tank in their second goal? It's all going wrong for England at the Azteca. Is this the end of days for England? Not that we all hope it to happen, but like, is that realistically what's going to happen?
Yeah, we were looking at the height of the Azteca, discussing, because it becomes sort of verbatim that, oh, it's altitude, and will England be able to deal with it without actually looking at what the altitude is? And we were looking at it this morning, it was 2,200 metres above sea level is Azteca, and that is the equivalent of taking one Karen Tuchel and putting another one on top of it, and then a 200 metre building on top of that, and then building the Azteca on top of that. So that's quite high.
Yeah. No, it is.
It might be difficult to play a football match at that altitude if you're not used to it. Ben Nevis is the biggest one in the UK.
1,300.
That's 1,300 metres.
So it's two of them.
So it's two Ben Nevis and then playing a football match on top of that.
Yeah. I was just looking at the weather in Mexico City. It looks like it's going to be kind of mild and rainy. England have played their first game in Dallas, which was an air-conditioned stadium. Then they played in Boston, I think, with rain. Mild conditions. Then they played in New York with rain. It was a bit like more Manchester summer's day. They obviously played last night in Atlanta, which is an air-conditioned stadium as well. So this is the first time they're going to have to deal with the conditions. And obviously they train in Florida, and Tuchel picked up Florida for a reason. So this is the first weather test that England will have to come through, or a conditions test, I mean, for them to come through. Mexico, we've seen a bit of them. Do they have the arsenal to beat this England team?
Yeah. Yeah, of course they do. Of course they do. They haven't conceded a goal. They've won every game.
90,000 Mexicans in the Azteca.
Yeah, and I'm sure everyone at this stage, if they're not familiar now, they will be by Sunday night, Monday morning. The fact that Mexico have never lost there in the World Cup, they've played 10 games.
Yeah,
the Azteca, they've an outrageous record in general. They've only lost there maybe 10 times ever.
Yeah.
So they absolutely do. They do have the talent and the ability and the circumstances to go and beat England. I'll come back to what I said earlier. The early goal is key. If England do get an early goal, how do Mexico react to that? They haven't conceded yet. We don't know what this Mexico team looks like coming from behind. But we look back at all those other England tournaments, particularly Euros, where they played pretty much every game in England, and how much that did benefit that team. A team that arguably was a bit better than this team that they have now, as far as the profile of player goes. And they came unstuck in Wembley at the very last hurdle, but it worked up until that point. Who's to say it won't work for Mexico? And if England play like they did against the URC, they'll be in trouble. And I think they already look leggy.
Yeah,
they look leggy. Declan Rice looked very, very leggy yesterday, and he improved it when you're in the right back. That's grand.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't fancy Julian Quiñones going in a foot race with Declan Rice at the Aztec. I think that's only ending one way.
Yeah, from personal experience in Mexico City, I was there for about 3 or 4 months.
Did you go travelling, did you?
I did, yeah. But I Mexico City, it took me about a month to get used to the altitude. You're just constantly gasping for it. You're just kind of gasping all the time. You never get used to it. But so England will only have a couple of days there before they can really properly acclimatise. I think as well that Thomas Tuchel and England are doomed when you pick Jarrell Quansah as a right back and Reece James as a right back, who obviously just can't stay fit. I just don't see an England team winning the World Cup with that squad and without Trent and Cole Palmer and Phil Foden. And those will prove to be mistakes that why England don't win the World Cup.
Yeah, and there's not that the players will be thinking this in this current moment in time, but I think it'll be easier for them to come to terms with that fact when they look at the fact that their manager isn't an Englishman.
Yeah,
And
the
blame of the media and the wider public, not just the media, the wider English public will go, it was him. It was him. And then the players will have a clean slate for the next one.
I'm trying to think of the back pages for the red tops after England either go through or go out. I was thinking maybe gasping for air with one of the England players looking dejected on the pitch.
Yeah,
or worth its weight in gold in reference to the city of gold, Aztec gold.
Yeah.
There's a couple of options there.
Yeah, or Goal, the movie.
Yeah, Santiago Munoz. Okay, Inside the Odds with NoviBet. Miss out on the final bet builder leg. Get up to a €10 free bet back every day on football's biggest tournament this summer if your bet builder loses. NoviBet, more power to you. 18+, play responsibly. GamblingCare.ie. See you next week.
Inside the Odds with NoviBet. Miss out on the final bet builder leg? Get up to a €10 free bet back every day on football's biggest tournament this summer if your bet builder loses. NoviBet, more power to you.
18+, play responsibly. GamblingCare.ie.